Welcome to the Cannabis Therapy Podcast. I'm your host, Earl Carruthers, and I have been a serial cannapreneur in the growing, processing, and retail space for over 8 years. And we are here to learn together to get a well-balanced understanding of cannabis and cannabis products. Tune in every week for quality cannabis education for your canna inspiration. Hello, 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 and what up, doe? Welcome to the Cannabis Therapy Podcast Show. Yes, this is a show to help you avoid those treacherous, uncomfortable experiences so that you can consume cannabis more comfortably. Not even just consume, but experience. Do that through this podcast, through education. I would do that through events that we help people connect. And of course, we're always advocating and keeping the good fight, the good fight. So what's up, though? We have a good topic today. Today, we're going to be talking about how to be more sustainable with your personal grow or your professional grow, if you're a commercial grow. We're going to talk about sustainability. We have a couple guests that's going to be joining me pretty soon. I got Jim behind the scenes. He's sending me. He does not have StreamYard link. Copy and paste the link for me, Jim. Copy and paste the link. It's in the Google Calendar. Copy and paste it. All right. We got some people coming on. We got some technical things, and we're going to keep this stuff moving. Nevertheless, this is the Cannabis Therapy Podcast Show. We have different series. We have series on enjoying cannabis as therapy. What up, though, Harvey? What up, though? This is a full interactive show. Maybe a little delay or whatnot, but any question you have towards growing. So we have Cannabis Therapy series. Man, I almost lost my thought. We got the History of Cannabis series. We have a series just on doing it yourself, such as making cannabis products. We have a series on, when I say cannabis therapy, meaning like the science of cannabis. We also have a business series. It's called Cannabis Connect, where we're talking more about cannabis business topics for those looking to get in the industry and those who are in the industry. What up, though? This is the actual Grow Your Own series. So we're going to be every week or a month, we're talking about some grow your own stuff. And this today, we're going to be talking about how to be more sustainable. What does it mean to be sustainable? Why does it even freaking matter to be sustainable in your personal grow? I should have Brett Bolg joining me in a minute. I'm going to do his introduction in a few. And then also I have Paul, that should be my co-host, joining me in a few. But thank you in the comments out there. This is a total interactive show. I'm going to do a quick introduction of our guest that should be coming. Jen, thank you for helping getting these people on here. Let me light up and listen. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. All right. So what I have coming on here, Brett Bolg is the owner and the founder of Apothecary Genetics. That's a seed bank company. Apothecary has been known for a while as being one of the world-class medical cannabis providers. Brett himself is known as being a world-class breeder, and he includes the notorious Grape Ape Genetics. Yes, he's known for the Grape Ape Genetics. And then also, he's named King of Kush by High Times Magazine. And Brett, he has successfully grown in over 25 different U.S. states, 4 countries, winning numerous awards, and cannabis cups. So they should be joining me any second. Jen, did you pass them that link in the back? Let me know in the chats. I'm going to get things going. If you have any questions as well about growing, this is a live Q&A. This is your time to ask any questions about growing, whether it's about your area, whether it is about climate, cloning, any of that jazz. This is a grow series. So any questions in regards to growing that we can answer, we definitely will do that for you. All right, cool. So I'm going to get things started. And when they jump on, Jen, just shoot me a chat. Other than that, let's keep things going. All right. So let's start off in this talk, in this show, we're going to be talking about what is sustainability as far as what you grow. We're going to talk about top tips. We've had some tips. We're going to talk about, do we agree with them? Are they practical on how to be sustainable in your grow? And then we're going to talk about the future of cannabis sustainability. We're going to get into that as well. So Without any further ado, what is sustainability in your growth? So this is my definition and kind of in layman terms, it's the act of meeting our own needs without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their needs. Meaning we just can't fuck up the earth and then forget about what's going to happen in the next couple of generations. When it comes to growing, we have to be practical and be mindful on how we're growing. So we're not just growing just for ourselves, but we're also growing for those who are looking to grow later on in the future. The other thing is, for the most part, in growing, a lot of us grow indoors and we also grow outdoors, but a lot of us grow indoors. And that does take up a lot of electricity, it takes up a lot of energy. And we have to be conscious of that as growers. So that is the reason why we've been talking about this. We think about cannabis as a green industry and things are, you know, in green, we think about recycling, we're thinking about making sure that things are sustainable. But truth be told, in this industry, there is a lot of waste. There is a lot of toxics being used in outdoor parks and et cetera. So we have to, you know, just have an open conversation about that. Jen, if you could shoot them a quick chat again of what the link is and see what the hold up on them joining, and we can keep this thing going. All right, so that is sustainability. Now let's talk about some tips. One of them is reducing energy consumption. Back in the day, we pretty much only had technology for HPS lights. We had technology for T5 lights. We had technology for metal highlight lights. And these lights and these hoods drew a lot of power. They drew a lot of energy and they caused a lot of heat. So some of the new lights nowadays, a lot of people are now growing with LEDs. And these LEDs are reducing energy. It's reducing the heat that is going into the room. And when you're reducing your heat, you're also reducing a couple other elements, such as your heating and cooling that's needed as well. So if you're using LEDs, you're going to save on your cooling. So you're not having to cool the plants as much. And you're not pulling as much watts per kilowatt. So you're not actually, your electric bill, you're saving on your energy savings, but you're also, your bill, you're going to be saving on that, but you're also not using as much energy. So, you know, looking at how much we can save on lighting, because, you know, one of the biggest factors, there's five major factors in growing. One is lighting. The other is airflow. The other is humidity. And then the other is CO2, oxygen, or carbon dioxide. You got to have those elements. So going back to the whole thing about lighting, if we don't have the right proper lighting, then our yield's not going to be there. So I get why we're trying to get the most intense lights there are. So we can actually grow that bomb, that dank, and get the most bang for your buck and those real dense nuggets. But there's a compromise too with how much it costs to do that. So with LED technology, I believe it's come around. I know a lot of us may think about LED as, man, it's not compared to the double-ended DaVitas or Phantom lights. I'm not sure. I personally will vouch and say that they're neck and neck. And if not, I can yield more off of LEDs. Just a matter of you learning your environment and how you keep them so close to the light, make sure your power's there, all that jazz. But I personally believe, bang for bang, dollar for dollar, that you can grow with LEDs and be just as good as growing with the lights that draw more electricity. So, and if you yourself, you grow and you're growing with LEDs, if you agree with me or you do not agree with me, let me know in the comments. Let me know if you have experienced the same, if LEDs are good, or you think you want to go back to the traditional metal highlights and the HPS bulbs and using those balances. But I personally think that you can reduce that indoors. Now, another thing that we could do is use supplemental lighting. Now, if you're indoor, I mean, the best way to do this is if you have some kind of sunroof per se that you can pull back and forth a tarp. Usually people using other energy methods when they are growing outdoors and using greenhouses. So in a greenhouse, you kind of got the best of both worlds where you can still control the climate. You still can't control the elements per se, because when you're outdoor, you're pretty much at mercy of Mother Nature. But when you have a greenhouse, you're kind of in between indoor, outdoor. So that greenhouse, you can actually retract some of the roof so that lighting, the true sun, is coming into the grow. So now you can use lights when you need it, but you also could use the sun. So you're not using as much energy. So you kind of got the best of both worlds. To do that on the inside of your house, a little bit more difficult, unless you're growing more in an attic or you have some type of system that you built, some kind of sunroof or whatnot on your indoor grow. But definitely in greenhouses, that is possible to do that. So any questions again on your lighting, let me know. If you do grow in a greenhouse, let me know that as well. But we're going to keep things moving. So that's the tip. So reducing how to be sustainable in your grow, reducing the energy consumption by your lights. That is a big practice. And I personally believe in the LEDs because one, I mean, having that heating and cooling guy come out every time there's something wrong with your air conditioning unit or your heating unit, man, that shit gets annoying. Then they're all in your garden and doing all this and you work in security. If you can eliminate just that one factor, I think it's a huge savings. All right, Jen, let me know if you know we still got the our guests trying to come in. Let me know if you they got the links, what the issues are. Otherwise, you know, it's a one-man show. We're gonna keep this shit moving, keep life rolling. All right, we got a question from Ms. G Caribbean. What is your opinion of a grow box for a first-time grower? You know, my opinion would be I'd rather you do a tent. I would rather you have a tent. Grow boxes are fine. I'm not against it, but you're going to quickly be able to scale out of that. So, I mean, you know, if you did do a grow box, it's just you trying to look at it also down the road. After you do this, you harvest, then what? Ideally, you want to have some type of perpetual harvest to where you got some things that are in seedling stage. You have some plants that is in veg stage. And you have some plants in flowering stage. And after your flower, you kind of got the plants that was in veg now moving to your flower. And those seedlings going to your veg. So you got this like this cycle that you got going on. Maybe tough with just a grow box unless you have multiple grow boxes. And if you're going to do that, you know, I would recommend just tents. In the tents, you have more flexibility as far as space. As far as if the plant does veg too large, you can go into that tent and you can set up some type of trellis netting to be able to control and manipulate the plant. So you got more spacing, you got more room for error as a first time grower. But ideally, even with a tent, if you had a room, a spare bedroom, a spare area in the basement, I would recommend that. But if that's not the case, if you want something kind of temporary, I will go with a tent over than a grow box. All right, cool. All right, thank you, Tim. Yes, keep life rolling. All right, cool. So that's tip number one. We're talking about reducing the lights. If you could afford it, there are LEDs on Amazon and all that jazz. I will be careful of that. We actually have on our homegrown summit, we did a big breakdown on LEDs. We also have some other content on LEDs. You could YouTube things about LEDs, but not all LEDs are created equal. You have to look at something called PAR. You have to look at something that can tell you how much light is coming out of that, how many lumens is coming out of that light. And just because you saw something on Amazon that's real cheap does not equal 1,000-watt light. And just because you're not looking at wattages, you're looking and you're measuring LEDs based upon how much intensity of the light is coming out, not wattages. The wattages are going to be lower on LEDs no matter what, because it just doesn't pull as much power. 1,000-watt traditional light could be equivalent to a 500 or 600-watt LED light. You're not comparing wattages. You're comparing the intensity of the light when you're comparing LEDs if you're trying to replace a 1,000-watt equivalent. All right, cool. All right, well, we have our co-host has arrived. Better late than never. You know, the show has been going on. We're talking about sustainability. What's up, Paul? We appreciate it. You are on.
I didn't mean to be late. I promise.
You're on the profit time here. PT time. All right. Profit people. PT time. What's up, brother?
I'm very sorry I'm late. We had a massive technical difficulty with the link. Usually the email has a little link in it. It didn't have it. So Jen hooked me up. We're good. It's good to be here. Top tips for sustainable growing. Reduce energy consumption by lights. Is this the first slide or is this the 10th slide? How much did I
know? You know what? It's all good. I'm going to catch you up. You know, we actually have our main, our guest is here as well. We have Brett. He's over there. Hopefully he's not driving at the same time as he's joining us. Brett from Apothecary Genetics. I already did the intro, Brett. If you can hear me, let me know. Say something when you're all good. You're on mute right now, brother. Brett, can you hear us? Live TV. You gotta love it. You gotta love it. Live TV when you're smoking. You know what? Muted. Who, me or Brett?
I think Brett's still muted. I can't hear him. Can you hear him?
You can't unmute guests because he chose to mute himself. Unmute yourself, Brett. I'm gonna smoke some weed as we're trying to figure out this technical scenario. Recovering the Biosphere LLC. What is that? Let me know what does that mean. It says Facebook user. I can't see you as far as what your name is. But Brett, if you can hear us, give us a wave. Let us know. All right, your mic is unmuted. Say something, my brother. Say something, Brett. This is why we smoke weed as we figure this stuff out. All right.
I'm at the Midwest Cannabis Business Conference here in Detroit today, so I won't be able to smoke on our broadcast.
Oh, yeah? I'm coming there tomorrow. I'm coming there tomorrow for the social equity. Thank you, Jen, for getting everybody here. But we're going to do that. So, Brett, when you are able to hear us, jump in, all good. All right, so, Paul, just a recap, man. We're talking about sustainability. We're talking about top tips right now for being sustainable in your personal growth. And your professional growth. We're talking about sustainability. And by definition, real talk, I mean, pretty much what that means is, you know, we got to be conscious of the people coming after us, meaning the other fellow growers, our other friends, the other people going to be living on this earth after we pass away. That's pretty much how we are defining what is sustainability. So we're all on the same page and we're kind of giving tips on how we can keep the future in mind as we're growing. Because we know that cannabis itself, it's a green industry, but we are not really that, you know, green friendly when it comes to this industry, because there's been so much waste, whether it's, you know, with energy, whether it's with toxics, whether it's with pollution. We have to be conscious as cannabis consumers and advocates to be green, not just cannabis green, but green towards this earth. How do you feel about that?
Definitely, and 100% agreeance with you. You know, we only have one planet. We got to make it last forever, and sustainability is the only way to go about it. Brett, what are your thoughts?
Brett's there. Jen, if you can just shoot chat Brett, maybe some tips on how he can come in and say some things, or even shoot him a message that, hey, you can talk, brother. Say something, Brett. All right. Nevertheless, so some tips. One of it is about reducing energy. I talked about LEDs. Any tips? And we talked about using some natural light to come in there. Any other tips, Paul, that you think for reducing lighting, reducing energy when it comes to growing in your personal grow or your professional grow? What do you think, brother?
So in a personal grow, one big thing you can do to make your energy consumption more efficient is to wire all your lights rather than from a 110, wire them all on a 220 so they pull light more efficient, so they pull energy more efficiently. I know a lot of, you know, back in the day, you'd get a high pressure sodium that, you know, ran off a 110. And if you, you know, did your lights on a 220 instead of a 110, you consume energy more efficiently. And if you have the, you know, the potentiality, you know, in a grow to, you know, instead of having single phase and everything hooked in through three phase, again, you know, you get a lot more efficient energy consumption.
It's a good point. 220 is a good point. And of course, all the other tips I talked about, I'm not going to repeat all that, but kind of keep things going. Another tip is reducing energy consumption by a HVAC system. This is something, so Chip is kind of cooling and heating programming together. So it's like a newer technology. Of course, there's a little bit more upfront cost, but this is supposed to be a way to where you can kind of capture heat byproducts to use as thermal energy. this is new to me. Have you heard of using this in like a personal grow, or have you heard of using this in any other type of environments?
Yes. The idea of taking electricity or energy as a whole that has been used, that will be used no matter what, and reusing it and recapturing for reuse, it definitely, it's not new to, it might be new to cannabis, but it's not new in the agricultural growth side of the world and just in the energy efficiency use in general. But yeah, the CHP technology, I'd say for cannabis, is fairly newer, very efficient technology though.
So would you say, I mean, how expensive is this, or would you know?
Incredibly expensive. That's not a cheap. It's not a cheap. It's not a cheap scenario. I mean, it's energy efficient, but the system as a whole is not cheap. So it's like the same concept of buying solar panels to not have an electric bill. It's a decently higher upfront cost, but a more efficient, cheaper long-term cost.
All right. So that's more for like a professional commercial grow versus a professional home grow. You do something like that for
exactly.
Us.
Exactly.
Another tip here for being sustainable you grow is instead of using air exhaust fans, replenish fresh air by installing a passive intake system. So instead of using a air exhaust fan, I replenish fresh air by installing a passive intake system. That's an interesting thing. My only concern with that would be the passive system having to make sure that there's not bringing any pests from the outside as well.
You nailed it. The pests, pollen. I mean, you got to think, how many outdoor hemp grows are there in Michigan now? Pulling air from outside into your grow, it's very, very, very possible. You could pull in, pollen from male hemp plants that are in these massive hemp fields.
Yeah. So, wow, you bring in pollen into your indoor. And so if you live in indoors, you're growing indoors, but yet say you're in a rural area and there's other hemp grows, that pollen from that hemp can come into your garden. And what, I mean, the issue with that is like, who, people are probably saying, who cares? Well, that hemp is most likely a male plant, and that pollen is going to impregnate your females, and now you got seeded wheat.
Right? Now you got seeded wheat, exactly. To a T.
Okay. Non-intentional seeded. Now, some people can do that on purpose if you're trying to breed, but if you're not intentional with it, I would not recommend it. All right, so one way is that one thing I want to talk about the airflow too. So you could actually have an intake system where there's cool air coming in, using an exhaust fan, cool air coming in, and also you have air going out. And you can use that cool air, especially in the fall right now, we can use that cool air instead of using your HVAC system. So that's another way to kind of reduce your energy consumption is using an exhaust system to where you got cool air coming in and you got fresh and you got air in the room going out. The only thing, like there's what is called these little mushroom fans or covers that can go over the fan that's with air coming in. It's kind of like this microphone. This mushroom cover goes over the fan. So any kind of bugs and things kind of get stuck in there. So that's another quick tip if you're trying to use fresh air and reduce your HVAC system as well. Another tip here is improve your water usage. Collecting rainwater. I actually have never done this. This is actually one of the first times I've actually heard of it when I'm doing this research, is that you can collect rainwater and repurpose that in your grow. Now, since we're so conscious about pH, now that jazz with growing, have you had any experience or have you heard of anybody kind of growing with rainwater?
I have heard of people who grow with rainwater, especially, those middle of nowhere grows. They use rainwater buckets to water everything. I'm not too familiar in terms of pH. What I can say is in, really, 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 industrialized areas, your pH is definitely going to be very, very acidic just from the natural city air as opposed to the rainwater that come from really, really rural areas. I would imagine it would be much more base pH level as opposed to the acidic city. just because of the different emissions that you would encounter from living in the middle of nowhere versus living in an industrialized city.
For sure, for sure. Now, another thing is you can collect excess water in your trays under your plant pot. I wouldn't recommend reusing some of the water from the overflow that comes from feeding the plants. Pathogens or some kind of issue that could be coming, and if one plant was sick and then you kind of spread it to the other plants. But I do get how you could repurpose the overflow, especially with hydroponics. If you're growing in different mediums, you're growing in those clay stones, or if you're doing aeroponics, you can repurpose water that way. But if you're doing like soil or cocoa, I personally wouldn't repurpose the water. What do you think, Prophet?
So the experience I have with growing, I always use recirculating systems. So I would put a week's worth of water in a feed system. It would water the plant, the water would drain back to the reservoir, and it would rewater it. We just do that all day long. Second the sun came up, a drip irrigator started dripping, and that water would drip down into the catch, and it would just all day. And when it was when the plants were vegging, it was a 1 gallon per hour drip irrigator, and they were budding, it was a 2 gallon per hour drip irrigator. And once a week the water got switched out, and it was a real simple process. So it really all just depends on your system. If you're taking plants without that automated movement where it's a continuous cycle but everything's moving, and instead you're just watering them with that base, this is what they're going to get, the water's going to go through. I'm not a big fan of the collection dishes unless you like the hyper-intensive labor of either vacuuming out every single one of those dishes or designing some sort of drainage system. Because if it's drained waste where it just drains out and goes on the floor, it's simple. But if it's a collect excess water with trays under your plants, you know, if you got 12, even with 12, that's still a tenuous process. Water the plants, then wait, go back down there and drain all the trays. And then, you know, you water once a day, twice a day. So you're doing the, you know, 24 trays a day. I just thinking out loud.
Yeah, you know, and I agree. And then even if you do have, you know, I personally do drain the waste. However, if you are draining and kind of recycling the overflow water, you do have to constantly also watch the PPMs or your EC and your pH, because some of that repurposed water will definitely affect the change of that PPMs, EC. And pretty much when I say PPMs, it's kind of the potency of the nutrients in the water. If it's too potent, it can burn the plants. If it's not potent enough, they can become malnutritious. So I believe that's the right word. I just made that one up. But nevertheless,
Earl, you nailed it. And, you know, another really awesome, you know, water usage improvement tip is aquaponics, where you use different species of fish to not only regenerate your water, but also feed the plants. I've seen a lot of really, really impressive grows that, you know, exclusively use aquaponics, and they're not just, yeah, you know, plant farms, they're fish farms as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. And then like some of them are like, they're actually reproducing like CO2 somehow with some of the waste. And then the fish that are, so aquaponics, or I'm sorry, it is aquaponics.
Aquaponics.
Aquaponics is grown with fishes, like literally like tilapia, like
fish poop.
And the fish poop is kind of giving nutrients to the water.
And nitrogen.
Yeah,
nutritious.
And plants are living off of that, and so now you can also, you know, when the fish get too big or whatnot, you can take them out, cook them. You can eat the fish. It's amazing. I personally haven't done it, but we actually did a show on the Homegrown Weed Summit all about aquaponics. So we're gonna repurpose that episode in our podcast as well. But yes, that's a way too for water. So all right, yeah. So those are some good tips. So you can, you know, try out rainwater. Just make sure the pH is good. And ideally, when I say pH, you want that range usually between 5.8 and like 6.2, 6.3. So definitely watch that. And then If you're going to collect water, just watch your potency levels, and then just understand the risk of that. Just like if you're going to repurpose soil, there could be things that are in the soil coming from one plant now affects every other plant as well. So I'll definitely be conscious of that if you're going to repurpose water. And then, of course, with aeroponics and hydroponics, that is more mainly, you're just growing with air, or you're growing in some other type of medium that doesn't involve soil as well. So talking about soil, talking about nutrients, some other tips on sustainability is pretty much compost tea, kind of creating your own nutrients using the earth, using natural organisms, using worms, using different castings, using old vegetables, banana peels, using all these different things to create your own compost kind of tea, and also just your compost that things are growing in. So do you have any experience with these composts, rather soils? Like we call it like living soils per se, right? It's a living soil where the soil is literally alive, and it's like this big old city happening in the soil. You know, there's a liquor store in the soil. There's a pharmacy in the soil. There's a grocery store. There's people's houses in the soil. Yes. And that's how the plants are eating. What's your thoughts on the living soil and compost tea, Prophet? I'm sorry, one second. Jen, if you can still... Oh, we got Brett joining us back in.
We got
Brett back. If you can hear us, by all means, brother, jump in. Say something when you're ready. Thank you, Jen, for pushing through and helping him come back in here. You know, he's one of the original OGs here. Hope he's cool, safe, and driving. All right, so talking about compost tea, fam. What's your thoughts on compost tea? What's your thoughts on living soil?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
We can hear you.
Is that Brett? We can hear you, Brett.
Yeah,
we can hear you, brother.
Brett, can you guys hear us?
Yeah, man. Welcome.
I am. Thank you. A little lost in time. 3 o'clock is standard, so that's the fault. Second, I usually don't do any IT, computer, anything. I have a full network team behind me, so you guys bear with me. I don't use a computer other than to get on it and ask someone else to push buttons for me. So how are you guys doing?
What's up, though, man? What's up, though? I appreciate the resilience on overcoming technology. Believe me, if I could live in a day with a pen and paper and some firewood in a wilderness, I probably would do that too, brother.
Well, no, it's having a team around you. You can listen to them and you can ask them and tell them how or what, and they assist you and make you look good, just like you guys are today. So without them, without the people that do that, we other people could never shine. So I give all glory and all thanks to them.
Awesome. Thank you, fam. Well, we're in the we are in the middle right now talking about how to have a sustainable grow, whether it's commercial, whether it is in your home grow. We're talking about sustainability, and by definition, sustainability, we're just talking about really keeping care of the earth so that those who are coming after us have an opportunity to partake in this wonderful plant as well. And in this industry, we know that it's even though it is green weed, however, we may not be practicing the most sustainable methods for long-term sustainability when it comes to waste, when it comes to packaging, when it comes to our growing methods, toxics, and all that jazz. So we're right now going through top tips on how we could be more sustainable as an industry in your personal grow or your commercial grow. You got me there, brother? All right, we're gonna keep it moving right now. So, Prophet, all right, talking about, give me your thoughts right now.
Well, I definitely think these are great topics, especially with how we have what is. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you, brother.
We can hear you now.
All All good. Prophet, give us your thoughts right now as far as compost tea, and give us your thoughts right now as far as living soil.
Very, very effective. Just from a testing standpoint, you know, smoking bud that came from compost tea or living soils. I mean, it's a night and day difference in the terpene profile. Just from a taste standpoint, absolute night and day difference.
Now, how practical is it? Because, I mean, I personally say my mindset, it can get out of hand. I mean, I'm only indoors. Brett, if you have any feedback on living soils or compost teas, my only thought would be if you're not, well, I don't want it to get to where it becomes toxic, where it destroys my garden. Because I believe there's still a balance you have to keep these living soils in. It can't get like Seymour and like eating everybody. But at the same time, it's got to feed itself. And I guess any thoughts on how practical it is to do it inside, say, like a home grow and like a personal grow?
I mean, I think it'd be very practical. It just comes down to, you know, knowing what to use and the quantities to use them. Because like you just said, you would hate to create a toxic sludge that you use for soil on your plants. So I imagine that there's a healthy balance of everything. And just like in a home grow, it'd probably be easier to do in a home grow than a massive commercial facility, because the amount of volume of living soil that you would need, you know, the scale of creating living soil at scale, you know, comes to question.
Okay.
Think how much compost tea you would need for a 50,000 plant grow op.
Yeah, and then trying to maintain that and keep that
forever,
for long term. I get that. So it's definitely, it reaches a point where you can't really scale. So more on a personal side is actually better for compost tea, or for.
That's why, in my opinion, the craft market, you know, you see a lot of the craft brands put out these amazing products because they don't have to master the problems of scale. They don't care about scale. They care about making the best small batch, every batch.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, fam.
We can hear you.
And by all means, Brett, jump in. We're talking about living soil and we're talking about compost tea as far as being sustainable in your grow, and kind of your opinion on, you know, how to make that happen. And is it really a good tip on how to be sustainable when it comes to this industry? So if you heard that, by all means, jump in with your wisdom and your expertise, my brother. All right, cool. All right, waste management. We're going to move on to waste management. Another way to be sustainable when it comes to growing, improve waste management. So we got, I mean, I guess there's now cannabis companies that actually come pick up cannabis waste that's designated just for cannabis.
Okay, so they're not like readily advertising per se, but like there's like, you drive down the 5 in Cali and you see billboards, you know, we'll take your old trim, you know, we'll come pick up all your grow waste. And I know guys in Michigan that do that as a service. I don't know if they advertise, but let me rephrase that. It is becoming a thing. Like, there are companies that are starting to dabble.
Okay. So, and the reason why we would do that is why? Like, why would it matter then if I just threw my waste in my normal trash bag, trash can, and gave it to the regular dumpster service that comes up, or trash service? Is there a reason why someone would want to use a company that is, I guess, using that waste in different ways? I guess, what else are they doing differently? If you know, what is a cannabis waste company doing differently than a regular waste company?
So I did hear that. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, sir. We got you, Brett. By all means, jump in, Brett, whenever you're ready. If you can hear us, join the conversation. So Paul, the prophet, what do you think about these waste companies and what they're doing? Like, do you know what they're doing any differently?
Well, there's different types of waste from our industry. You know, a perfect example is in the extraction side, you know, all the biomass, or even on the grow side, the biomass. You know, what do you do with all that? And having that specialized cannabis waste disposal contractor that comes in and knows how to properly dispose of your product, to me, is important, because if you're doing this at scale, you are going to contribute to that 150 million tons. You're going to be a massive contributor to that. And not, you're just throwing it in the trash. To me, you know, if it made sense to put our leaves into the same trash bin, we would do that. But obviously there's a reason we don't. It's because certain things decompose better with other things. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. And Brett, yeah, we can hear you, fam. If you ever want to jump in, if you can hear us pretty good, you know, jump into the conversation. It's all good. Another way of being sustainable in our grows. I don't know, the word sustainable when you smoke becomes different. Sustainable in our grows is moving to a grow outdoor. That's a way to reduce. So maybe if you're living in an area where you could grow outdoors and you are growing indoors, maybe in the season you can grow outdoors and then switch to indoors when it's off season per se. Like right now it's coming fall, coming winter here in Michigan. Here is when we start planning to go indoors as we reap our harvest from outdoors, what we kind of planted in the spring. What do you think about that, is going kind of outdoors, more outdoors than just always staying indoors?
I like outdoors. I like outdoors. You know, from a craft side, growing 12 plants outdoors can be a very advantageous summer. You know, you can create a scenario for yourself to have product for the whole year when done right. You know, you could, and this is a simple plan that could allow you to grow 12 monsters in the summer. Okay, you start vegging the plants in December, and by May 1st, you know, we're talking 5 months, 6 months of vegetative growth indoors.
Vegging the plants in December. Vegging the plants in December.
You start vegging the plant. Literally, you put the seeds in, cut clones. You start the process December 1st, and you veg from December 1st until May 1st. And they should be trees. And then you plant those 12 trees in the ground and let them grow all summer. And that's 12 plants a year. You only do one harvest a year if you want to talk about sustainable. Because when they go into the ground, they're monsters. Doesn't matter if they get stunted. They're huge.
They are very huge. So simple, and then they're gonna veg still come May, April. Well, they're gonna, what is it? April, May.
May, June, July, August.
July, August. November. They're still vegging. And then come October and November, they're flowering. Yeah. You're talking about maybe two, 3 pounds of plant, bro. That's crazy. All right. Hey, you guys heard it here. 12
plants a year.
12 plants
a year. Simplest way to do it.
3 pounds a plant or 2 pounds. Say that's, you know, that's 24 pounds in a year just by going outdoors if you start to veg in December. You got a very good point right there, my brother. You have a very good point. A very good point. Especially here in Michigan, we do have...
Oh, no, finish that.
No, go ahead.
Well, all I'm saying is you wouldn't have to have gigantic, they wouldn't have to be tall. Imagine topping that plant for 6 months. How many tops you'd have when you put it into the ground? You could permaculture a perfect bush if you wanted to.
Wow. That's dope. I like that.
Can you hear us now?
Yeah, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, brother.
Yes.
Okay, it has finally worked. The phone, I had to put the phone in the actual freezer to calm down because it was literally overheating because I had, but whatever, you know, the other Skype, then the WhatsApp, then the Signal, then the Telegram, people were calling. So anyways, there it is again. So
it's good Brett's on with us because my phone has 7% left. So if I cut out randomly, it's because it died and I'm nowhere near a charger at this convention. Left my bag there in my car. Go. So when I cut out randomly, I love all of you.
Perfect. Perfect. So I've been listening, and definitely I've been catching, regenerative farming is beautiful. I think it's something, it's like when people talk about something new that, that's actually been going on for tens of thousands of years. So we need to figure out, no, we haven't invented anything. We're just using practices that are so old that Jesus wants to come back and get an autograph. So we just have to realize that we have to stop like we invented something. If we would look at what we were a modern day, his name is Kevin Klein. He owns Black Organics out of Olympia, Washington, like a Paul Stamets, kind of a man kind of ahead of his time. He invented he coined phrased the veganics, which he says is one of the worst things he's ever done in his life, because he realized that it really isn't the essence of life. Life needs a multitude of minerals, microbeneficials, and enzymes that all exist from the earth itself. To take those out, then actually take away from what the plant actually needs to succeed. So that itself is just garbage. Should throw that out the window. And if you'd like, you can look at the information out of Black Lake. He'll tell you all about it and tell you why it doesn't work. But ultimately, as far as being able to farm and use what is regenerative, I think it's a great practice. I think, regenerative, if you will, to even rejuve your plant, which is really easy to do. I heard you guys talk about plant size and everything. Imagine you could have a 6-7 foot plant, like if it was a cherry apple tree, but this is a cannabis tree, and you actually pluck and then rejuve the plant. So now you won't just have a 6 foot, you might have a 25 to 40 foot, but who knows how big the thing will grow, especially if you're outside in climates. It's probably more like Texas and Arizona, the southern parts of California, things of that, and states that are along those kind of hemisphere on those very warm climate tend to stay warm. You could do that. But I think farming organically, and then as you guys had mentioned, for the earth, and looking at materials that are biodegradable. Of course, hemp is a great product and is biodegradable, but I would challenge your listeners to actually go and look up Moringa, and you'll find that it is a much more suitable plant, much more usable, readily available, grows up to 15 foot every 2 months. It hardly needs any water. So there we go. We're like a win-win. It puts out 0% emission, has 32 to 40% oil, making the number one biofuel in the world, as well as it, of course, has the highest omega 3, 6, and 9s of anything on earth, as well as it has a plethora of microbeneficials and enzymes. You can use it not only for energy, which is a great energy source. You could use it in the morning and not eat the whole day. You could also use it for a weight loss prevention. And finally, of course, it's great for the mind, Alzheimer's, pains, and other diseases. What they're finding right now is it's a great source of food. So really, you're eating a tree, go figure, because that's what Moringa is. It's a tree, soft bark, leaf, and nut. So those are just things that I think if we are to look at, and we want to be conscious enough to take control of what we have and be good shepherds of Mother Earth, those are some of the examples that I might suggest.
Awesome. I would love to, and we were, we do have a good connection and all that jazz, I'd like to kind of wrap up some of the key takeaways with you. We were coming towards the end of the show, but I definitely want to get some of your thoughts on some of the tips we went over on how to be sustainable. One of them was reducing our light usage with LEDs. Do you have personal opinion, thoughts of using LEDs versus the traditional double-ended lights, 1,000-watt hoods? Do you think we're there with technology? And whether it's a personal grow or commercial, thinking long-term, that we should be able to now be starting to switch to LEDs and kind of fade out the traditional lights?
Great, great questions. And definitely very important throughout our industry. as we go on, and maybe a little factual. For every 1,000 watt light that's ran, that is the same emissions as a car driving around the world. So for every 1,000 watts. So us as growers, us as indoor growers, we're really not helping Earth too much. So we need to take that into consideration. Two, I started working with LED lights in 2002, where we would make our own LED lights. Watching an industry using technology that was learned in space, and that's where LED lights were first brought into the kind of play, like our flashlights and our housing lights, then realizing with multitude of spectrums how you could create what in essence is life, how the photosynthesis period works with the light itself, and that's how the plant is eating through systemically through its leaf, its cells, and its stalk. I think that as we're going to move forward, I think that the industry is going to have to, you know, adapt. But I think it has a play to go. I kind of lost my train of thought. Can you throw me back on what we were?
You were talking about how using LEDs, you kind of built your own LEDs.
Perfect. Perfect.
Kind of coming from space, and.
So LED lights, where we're at today, they've come, you know, as I described, I'm talking 2002. So that's 19 years ago that I started playing around making lights for growing. In those grow lights, I use 8 different spectrums of light. We got out of a 3x8, we got 4.5 pounds off 800 watts of light. Now, those lights at that time, and I'll go a little bit into that, is the cost. And that's the big deterrent right now for most of the people getting in. Our lights at time to go over a 3x8 cost us
$4,000.
$4,000. Gotcha. And so there is where you had to say. So at that time, of course, although we were getting almost 4 pounds for only 800 watts, the cost for us to get in to set up was a little bit over our liking. So we just really never did that. Now, go to fast forward today, many different light companies have put out lights. I still believe at the end of the day, you have to add either silica or blood or something heavy duty, but some sugar, some carbs in order for your flowers to really kind of finish off and be that, what I call that dense world championship yummy. And that is what you get generally from the HPS and the metal halides. Mm. I have been seeing some LED lights that are coming very close, which is great. Now we're talking still about cost. If that really is the only deterrent for us to be able to switch over from that 1,000 to the LED light, I think we should do that. I think we should mandate it. And I think it's something that needs to happen. To again, if we're going to do our part and do our part as far as the cost and everything else. Now, when you look at it, of course, when you use the LED lights, that's at least a third reduction. But I might even suggest that you go into what is a 12-1-12 system, where you're actually reducing the lights themselves, and you're mimicking more of what natural light is, where the plant itself actually can rest through, and you're saving because you're not running them on your flower for, let's say, 18 hours. You might only running them more for about 14 to 15. And in flower, you're only running them for about 10 lights. So I think that that's something that also you could be using a flip-flop system where all the same balances, the balances shut down for 30 minutes on each side, but you're running double the hoods. Wow. So there's a multitude of ways to do it. So that's how I see the future. And we will have to move from these heavy costs. Because if we look at the growing right now, that is where the cost really sets us back when it comes to production. And we were talking about the craft. The craft grows are really that. They're smaller. And most of it's probably hand trimmed. Because if you look at, you guys have noticed over these last 5 or 6 years, the industry has done a quick one on you. They go to all machine heavy trimming. That, in fact, then keeps your bud. So then they double up on the cost while selling you it at a premium price for weed that's the same, but put it on a different name, because that's a ripoff. All the weed's the same. from the gelatos, the sherbets, the Gary Paytons, all that, to the Mac one, all that. Basically, you must like OG Kush and Grape Ape. How you doing? But you want to pay $80 an eighth? Hey, revolt. Tell them it's only worth 10. I'm not lying.
No, I'm not lying. I feel you.
We have to take back the industry, you guys. You have to be demanding. You can't have fake nobodies. And I mean that with all the respect. If we want to go in the industry and you guys want to hand out Emmys and Oscars for the greatest psych and fake job of the history of the cannabis industry, you gave the winners the fake. They don't grow. They don't breed. How the hell can our industry go out, be walking around looking about probably as dumb as they come? Because you're putting up a nobody, a fake, a fraud up top. Our industry was built by goddamn gangsters and Tone Loc OGs that we rode from goddamn like Rick James and motherfucking P. Diddy from one end of the goddamn country to the world. And that's what I did, yo. And what I'm saying to people is stop putting up fake motherfuckers. Make the industry accountable for what it is. OGs ran these streets. OGs ran these goddamn countries. And we still do it today. I don't like all this fake. We need to be accountable. Tell a motherfucker, you came up with that? Show me where you grew it. Show me how you bred it. You can't show me a goddamn thing other than looking cool behind a goddamn screen. Get the fuck out of here.
I got it. And a recap to the audience, we're talking to one of the original breeders, one of the originators of the true Grape Ape. And it's not a fake Grape Ape. And how we got a lot of genetics today. We have to thank some of our OGs. And Brett has been one of those OGs who there's a lot of risk. It wasn't all fun and dandy and shipping and all that jazz. You had to go from different countries. You had to go search different genetics. You were actually really breeding. It wasn't just by accident. You have some hermaphrodite, and now you call it, you know, runts. But now
you got feel the, me, and you got the vibe. And if our, if the young, if the it really, it's the young, the youth, and really true, the culture, and the culture needs to understand your granddads, your dads, your uncles. Maybe even your moms or your aunts. Yo, they ran this game. They risk everything. They risk their life, their freedom, maybe not even to come home to you at night. That's what all this was about. And thank you for recognizing it, because that's the truth. And we need to say that. You know, people can write and they can do a lot of things. They can put a lot of people write a lot of stories about me, right? But the fact of it is, in the street where I'm from, where I was raised, you got to have paperwork full. You can't be running your mouth. You want to walk up and you want to go around and rattle your cage. You better bring paperwork full, because that's all you're doing is looking like a fool. Anyone can write a story. Anyone can tell you a story. Anyone can put anything on the internet, yo. No. It ain't real till it's goddamn paperwork signed by a goddamn government, a state, a county, or a city. If not, yo, that's paperwork, mouth service, people. And understand that, youth. Be strong. Don't let people out there telling stories about something say, hey, yo, well, that's cool. Bring the paperwork full. If not, you're just yapping. And that's real talk.
That's real. And that's having some systems to really authenticate what's what, and not just slapping names on things and making things up. But, you know, what's the true genetics? And we're talking about Brett. And if you guys are just now joining us, we got Brett Bogue from Apothecary Genetics, one of the original genetic OGs companies. Definitely, if you get any genetics from that company, whether it's Grape Ape or any other of his awesome genetics, it's true. It's real. They're not made up. And he can show you kind of where they came from versus a lot of people making it up. So, man, it's definitely an honor to have one of the true OGs in the game to come on to the show as we talk about sustainability. Real quick, I kind of want to circle back one thing, Brett, as far as your thoughts as if you're trying to be sustainable. We were talking about compost teas and living soils. From your experience, for being in the game for years and years and years. Do you see compost teas and living soils as a long-term future method in growing, or you think that's going to fade away?
Well, I think it's twofold. One, it's going to come right from, we'll call it the artist, the craft, the grower, how and what type of product they want to be known for and what they put out. Now, there's a little bit of research, and some might say there's cost. I beg to differ with that. The reason is all from the NPKs are minerals and as well as microbeneficials and enzymes that work, and also there can be elixirs. The potassium can be considered as an elixir, an electrolyte, excuse me. Putting those together, you can buy those. By buying those, you can cut your costs down. Fertilizers are all very similar. I challenge your listeners to go out, go to Home Depot, go to Lowe's, go to Ace, go to any Menards, wherever you guys are located, major kind of hardware stores that sell fertilizers, or any of your garden stores, hydro stores. Walk in, look at the back of the fertilizers. And I don't like to rip any per se as companies, whatever. We all are trying to make money, and we're all that good at something. Like I said earlier, the other people are good at acting and making movies. So everyone's got to be good at something, and we can't hold them down. That's brilliant. Fuck, I wish I could make money doing that too. But now back to the actual point at hand here, is that when you're looking at that fertilizer, look at the back, you're going to note something. Every one of those fertilizers are the exact, you heard it. Let me say it again. Every one of those fertilizers in there, and there's hundreds, are all the exact same thing. So I want you to challenge yourself when you walk in there and you look at that and you're like, wait a minute, why would I pay X amount of hundies over here? And then I'm going to save money and I'll just pay 75 over here. But why am I paying the 75 or I'm paying the 100 when I could go and I could go get all that for less than, let's say, $30.
Wow.
So please, listeners, go out and do some research. Look at what the MPKs are. Go look what microbeneficials and enzymes are. And then why don't you? You talked about sustainable and regenerable farming and teas. Well, I just broke it down for you. And what I did is quickly as you could go out, you want to make a tea? You can go get some back guano. Go get some worm castings. Go get some sea kelp. Go get some boron. Go get some rice hulls. Go get some actual mushrooms that are growing outside in your yard. Pull them up. Make sure they're not poisonous. And then let them dry, break them up. Then go get a 55-gallon drum. Go get a cheesecloth. Throw all those ingredients other than the mushroom spores inside. Let that brew up, you know, good 16 to 24 hours. That's fine. And about 4 hours before you're ready to use the tea, throw in the mushroom spores or the chopped up mushrooms that you got from outside that you sun dried. Once you throw them in, they will release the microbeneficials, the enzymes. They are active. They're live. You'll have an air stone inside with an air pump that will be pumping, and that's what you're making your tea. You're brewing it.
Yeah.
Again, 16 to 24 hours of a brew. The last few hours of your brew, add the microbeneficials, the mushrooms, that what I told you how to go get for free. And basically what I'm saying to you is they have a window of life. Those microbeneficials only live for 8 hours. So I can almost guarantee you that, I hate to say it, but it's probably true, probably 90% of your listeners have been going out, go buy Great White, mycorrhiza, micro whatever, and they throw it in thinking that they're using it and then making a tea. Well, they didn't realize that if they brewed for 24 hours and they threw the mycorrhiza or the enzymes inside, they're actually dead by the time they actually feed their plant. So I hope what we just did is we saved a lot of money for people and we got them to go to regenerative farming and organic farming, making teas. I hope that helped out.
That's dope, man. That's game. That's key game. That's key game. Listen, I'm right at the top of the hour, man. I wish we had more time. We gotta reconnect next time. Now we got the tech bugs all ironed out, all the wrinkles ironed out. I got your email up there. We have your company. We have your website. Anybody looking for awesome genetics, please check out Apothecary Genetics. Again, if you want to watch this episode, any of the past episodes, go to CannabisTherapyNetwork.org. Click on the hub button, and all of our videos, all our slides, they're free. And all our videos inside of our hub, you can research keywords. If we talked about genetics, you type the word genetics, and then go to all of our videos, hundreds and 200s of videos. Everything we talked about genetics will pop up, and you can just watch that one topic as well. So, and then check us out at the Craft Cannabis Club. That's where we're airing from right now. Private club with a pretty cool vibe, pretty cool community where you can come kick it and be around like-minded individuals. And of course, check out the Cannabis Therapy Podcast. Subscribe every single Wednesday. We have a new episode, and we got to get you back, Brett. We got to get you back, brother.
Always. It's a pleasure, you guys. And I apologize for my lack of kind of this internet thing, but I will say this is, if you will have the team hit up AD, and I'll send you a link here afterwards. I'll send it via the email, and he can then tune it all in. So then it's just probably just a quick, easy drop finger push, and I'm on, and he can get the back end as well for me. All right.
No, definitely. When we gotta kick some, we gotta pick your brain some more, because you have a lot of knowledge up there, man, and you can help a lot of this us the young
generation. You know what, bro? Thank you for saying that. And that is something, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but I really want to encapsulate that. It is my honor. It is my place on this earth to do whatever I can to give my knowledge free and free will. It's never to take anyone down, to disrespect, but it really is to uplift people and to be, as you open the show up, is being a shepherd of the earth, learning how to use sustainable materials to better our future. And it really is a culture, a mindset to change a lot of things. So I'm glad for this opportunity to have a platform to be able to share my ideas. And hopefully that can rub off on someone. One person is good enough that can make a difference. So thank you so much.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. And until next time, everybody out there, keep life rolling. I love it. All right, y'all. See you next episode. All right, Brett. Thank you, brother.
Blessings. Peace, guys. Peace. One love.
Thanks for listening to the Cannabis Therapy Podcast. For more cannabis therapy blogs and resources, check our website, CannabisTherapyNetwork.org. CannabisTherapyNetwork.org.